Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Hello, welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz. Sitting here with Chad and Chase Valencia, co-owners of Lhasa here in Chinatown in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show.
Happy to be here.
Super happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
Of course. So even though we're in Chinatown, this is a Filipino restaurant.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
which It's sort of the beauty of Los Angeles that even though there's tons of little areas, tons of different like ethnic pockets, you can sort of pop up a restaurant anywhere, regardless of the you know type of area you're in.
Absolutely.
Where'd you guys grow up?
We were born in Los Angeles, and as we were growing, our parents kept moving more east and more east. So outside, after Los Angeles, we moved to San Gabriel Valley and kept going more east, then from San Gabriel Valley into the Inland Empire, and then we grew up in Chino Hills, California.
What was that like? What was growing up? Who cooked in the family?
My mom.
Mom and grandma.
My grandma.
Yeah?
We had like a strong matriarchal family and a lot of cooking happening, a lot of Filipino meals all day.
Every day.
We grew up with that. And then Sundays would be Popeyes, Yoshinoya, or Chinese food.
After church.
After
right.
church.
After church.
After church.
If you pray, you get the fried chicken.
Uh-huh.
If you pray, you get a beef bowl at Yoshinoya.
If I get that miso soup.
Oh, yeah. So you're second generation Filipino-American. Mm-hmm. What's the Filipino community like in America? Big population, small population?
It's fucking huge.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to curse?
You're allowed to curse.
Cool, yeah. It's fucking huge. apparently, we're the second largest minority, right?
Asian. We're the second largest Asian community.
Who's first?
Chinese.
Are you sure about that?
Guys. I mean,
you're a Filipino restaurant in Chinatown. That's my basic research.
No, but yes, we're...
I feel like... Chinese.
Okay.
Yeah, Chinese is first largest, sure. Second largest Asian.
Yeah.
Community.
Cool. Well, thanks for the assist on that.
And is it a tight-knit community? You know, like, do you, when you go to other Filipino pockets, everyone's like...
I can say yes
they
and
recognize,
no.
Game recognized game?
Yeah, I mean, it's different because there's a lot of us in different parts of SoCal.
You have
a lot of us in the South Bay, a lot of us in the Valley. You have a lot in West Covina, Inland Empire, area where we're from,
yeah.
We hung out at. But in terms of similarities, a lot of us grew up with a lot of hip hop. You know, parents came from the Philippines, so we guys have those cultural ties and understandings. You know, so in a sense, there is that game recognized game of that.
So is it like 1 foot Filipino culture, 1 foot American culture,
absolutely.
Like the classic second generation?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But I mean, you guys obviously having a Filipino restaurant didn't reject Filipino culture outright, but was there any point growing up where you're like, I want all American, like...
Fuck yeah.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Assimilation,
we did reject it.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm like, me opening a Filipino restaurant as an adult is like making up for my childhood of being ashamed of the food and the culture. And I mean, you know, our parents came here to assimilate. We talk about it, and it's a constant conversation piece with Filipino American food and us trying to pursue Filipino food. But yeah, our parents came here to assimilate. They weren't proud of everything. Stayed at home, everything,
all the Filipino,
you know?
Food. So it wasn't like you were going to lunch and in the brown bag was like,
well, yeah,
rice, hard-boiled eggs, things like that.
Yes,
maybe like
yeah.
A egg scrambled egg sandwich,
sure.
And pan de sal, but nothing, yeah. Like there was no like sour soup in my broth for 30 in my
right
bag.
You're not popping that thermos
right.
Down, people are going like, what is that smell?
Right.
Right.
But yeah. so mom cooked, grandma cooked, but I mean, did you love the food at home growing
oh, yeah.
up?
Hell yeah absolutely.
I mean,
without
like,
a doubt,
the beauty about it was our family cooked really well, and we were so obsessed about it. Like when we're talking about, oh, you know, Tita Baby's pancit's really good. We're going to her house tonight. So, oh yeah, I love the way that she does it, the way that she cooks the noodles, the ratio between like carrots to beef. You know, we talk about it like
yeah.
that, and then we'll compare it to my other aunts or something.
And that's just how our family.
I mean, that's
was.
Just how our family was.
Yeah,
so it was innate in us in the way that we kind of saw it all and how excited we got about food because it wasn't just my brother and I, it was also our parents and our aunts and relatives too, who are also on that same tip, and cousins, just talking about the food. So
were
it was just in our DNA.
And were you too close growing up?
Yeah.
Yes.
But
and
high
then
school
no,
happened,
and
you know?
Then yes again.
Yeah.
And then right now.
we're talking now. You know?
Yeah, we're talking. Look, I've been in business with my brother for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah,
totally.
But growing up, did you guys ever like have businesses together? You guys ever like do the lemonade stand or anything like that?
Yeah, a comic book shop.
Comic book and cards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah, we had that. I'll bring that up when we were kids.
Like,
that was fun.
Marvel nerds to the core.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know? he still's got some like wrapped comics.
Yeah.
Give him that.
You're like, all right, man. Crispy. So if we have a slow summer, I'm pulling out these Wolverine issues.
That's what I'm saying.
We'll float the restaurant. I got you. We'll put it. Yeah. So when did you guys first start getting interested in the restaurant business? And I'm assuming when you, or maybe I'm wrong, but when you first got started, the idea to open up a Filipino restaurant probably wasn't the first thing that came to mind.
No, I think when Chad and I really thought about it, like we were about 18, 19. We were working together at this mom and pop show owned restaurant
called Owen's Bistro.
Owen's Bistro in Chino. And it was awesome because, you know, in the suburbs, all you have is, you know,
Applebee's. Olive Garden, right. McDonald's. Mm-hmm.
The whole nine. And then you got this mom and this like husband and wife team trying to open up something cool.
That's
like,
pretty cool.
And that was...
And making stuff from scratch?
Yes.
Right. And they still exist.
And they still exist to this day.
Wow.
And we got hired on as servers, or actually bussers. Let's be real. Let's be real.
I was a bus boy.
We were both bus boys hired on.
Who was the better one?
I mean...
Before that, I was a dishwasher at a bakery for 2 years.
Okay. But so were you just drawn to food because that was just sort of where you could get a job, or did you have something a little bit deeper?
For me, it was definitely just the first job I got. My cousin kicked me down this job. He's like, you want to wash dishes? You know, I was a junior, so I was 15 and a half, whatever, and I was able to leave school early even if I only worked 8 hours a week.
You know what I mean?
So it was tight. I was like, yeah, I'll do this. And then it was just meant extra money for, at that time, anything skateboard related, you know? And it made sense. And then after that, Chase had already been serving at Bob's Big Boy.
Chili Spaghetti.
And Diamond Bar.
Chili Spaghetti.
Off the 60. And so, like, yeah, we found Owen's Bistro, and we started as busboys.
Now, was that a revelation? Because I grew up in the suburbs as well, and it was like on the edge of Philadelphia, and so I definitely had, and my mom cooked a lot, so I had the general concept of like, okay, restaurants, some restaurants serve processed food, and some restaurants serve real food. But when you go to the bistro, do you go like, oh, this is sort of like what we know from home, if not the flavors, but the process of making things on your own?
Yeah, I started thinking about that for sure. Like, I think even as a busser from the get, I would spend a lot of like the downtime just kind of watching the kitchen dudes, you know?
Yeah.
And that's where the kind of initial fascination happened. I mean, you know, apparently when I was younger, I told my mom I wanted to be a cooker at Denny's.
Came high, moved up to Miami, right? But you wound up going to kitchens, right? I mean, you put in a decade in professional kitchens. Not that, I mean, obviously there's a professional kitchen as well, but what made that shift? What from the bistro brought you like out into the world? Because you traveled around and you cooked.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was never very good at school.
Yeah.
I think I'm more of a intuition, instinct kind of based person. And, you know, that lends itself really well to the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I was pretty good at it for being so young. And yeah, I was just like, I think this is something that I can do.
And you cooked at some big kitchens too, right?
Yeah. Big neighborhood restaurants that were, you know, like Canale, I feel like, is where I really kind of got a huge sense of what a chef-driven, market-driven restaurant was. The team that I got to cook with at that time, damn near everyone that I worked with on the line is very ambitious and still killing it.
Yeah.
I worked at Contigo in San Francisco, a Spanish joint in Noe Valley, another neighborhood restaurant that, you know...
That was very influential.
Very, very influential.
And Chase, you went from busing at Owen's to managing, right?
Yeah.
What drew you to management? Because some, you know, that's not a normal story that we get to tell here about people who are like front of the house. Like, what started you down that path?
Well, honestly, working at Owen's Bistro and feeling like I was gonna get into like a fascination of the process. You know, when you're seeing this husband and wife literally doing everything from scratch, from making decisions on the wine to what kind of napkins are we going to get, and or what are we going to do on this menu, like direct influence on what's going to happen for the opening a restaurant for that day to make people happy and serve. That was a trip where we grew up seeing suburbs where like They're just cutting open a bag, putting it in a pot, warming it up, $25.99.
Yeah.
And it's fucking bomb, you know, whatever. Yeah. You know, like
Applebee's.
God. Applebee's, Cheesecake Factory. Yeah. You know what I mean? So seeing that kind of blew me away in the sense of just how hands-on this can really be. And so from that experience and seeing how, honestly, Denise was the owner and Jim, how they engaged with their guest and how much they cared for anyone that walked into those doors, it really sunk into me, and it still sinks into me to this day. So from that, I wanted to kind of create that on a larger scale and see how I can do that the rest of my life.
And you wound up going from there to work for Wolfgang Puck, right?
Yeah, Wolfgang Puck Catering. Actually, when I started there, I started at the front desk. Like,
get in any way.
Yeah, just giving away paychecks for the staff, and then just really pushing the operations team to let me like take on some tasks here and there, help them out, just really hustling for it. And then from there, they kind of let me in a little bit, and I was there for 4.5 years.
Wow.
And so from there, I moved to management from LA Live, PD, Pacific Design Center, Sony.
Best thing you learned there? What was Beats. Like the one tip that you still learned from there that you still apply today for management?
I think management from there is you can make shit happen, period. Yeah. No matter the situation, you're going to figure it out, you know, and trusting the team and trusting yourself. I think that was really huge because it's such a big, Wolfgang Puck Catering is so huge, you know,
yeah.
And every, like, we're doing events for like thousands of people and everyone's such a big part of it. And you got to trust everyone, trust the system, trust yourself, and we're going to figure the solution out. And it really stuck out to me. Yeah.
And then, so you guys were, you know, you were in San Francisco, Chad, and Chase, you were at Wolfgang Puck, but then you both wound up at Squirrel.
Yeah. Yes.
How did you guys wind up there together?
Through Chad.
So when I left...
And what year is this?
2012.
Is that for real? 11 or 12?
11 or 12.
Okay, so when I left Canalay to move up north, it's getting a little stale here. Like, there was no Bestia, there was no Night Market, there was no the flux of our generation chefs opening
hadn't
new spots. Hadn't happened.
It was coming.
It was coming. That was like
real fucking
soon. It was like
soon.
Light on the edge.
Right. Bakwakat was coming through.
So 6 months into living up there, I had already made the decision that I was only going to be there for another 6 months. And Rhea, who I worked with at Canalay, was the opening chef at Squirrel. And so she was like, hey, if we move back down, I need some fucking help. So that's how I got that job. And then it was so small back then that Jess, Coslow, and Rhea were like, if you know anyone that wants to run, let's put them on. So I hollered at my wife and Chase to run.
Nice.
There were no servers there, but just run food because it just started turning into high volume. And so that's how we both ended up there. And while we were there, although the discussion had started, that's when we really made the decision to start, like, let's just do some backyard dinners and see how it goes.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get to those dinners, and then taking those dinners and turning it into the restaurant that we were sitting in now. We have a song from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Dead, I miss some stuff. I will catch in a daydream without closing my eyes. Ooh, yeah. New sound temptation, can't look away. You're my fixation, not only today. Taking it my way, alright. Yeah. Jumping I just wanna hold you. I know you just wanna pray like a piranha. Telling lies to mama. All those people saw you twirling your hair. I'm gonna catch you and you don't care. I know you've got a secret for me. I better run. I better run. I know you've got a secret for me. I better run. I'm already writhing because your touch is so reviving. I can't express what shape besides love is a compromiser. Work with the grand designer. And if you should leave me, I already know. We came apart because the blow was at the door. So I'll just say my piece so you receive it all. No matter large or small, it's bouncing off the wall.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are here at Lhasa with co-owner and chef Chad and co-owner and GM Chase. So you guys are at Squirrel and then you start talking about doing some pop-ups. What sort of made you want to start doing these pop-ups? Did you sort of see that there was a wave of your generation doing restaurants, or were you just saying, we can do this?
Yeah, that. I think, honestly, we were before that. We kind of thought that we were going to pursue food, but if we were going to do Filipino, we weren't going to get investors like right off the jump. It was more, it's got to be organic. In a sense where we have to build.
Let's up, grow.
Let's grow.
Let's it's figure about, it out.
Let's plant the
let's
seed.
Let's just try. Exactly. Yeah, let's plant the seed.
You know, let's be honest with ourselves, you know?
I mean, in 2012, 2013, what was the perception of Americans of Filipino food, or was there even one?
There was...
Hell no. When we started doing pop-ups, man, there was nothing. Nothing. Like, no, absolutely like, nothing. We were definitely, like...
I think the only thing going on was in New York. Maharlika.
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 You know? Right.
I mean, Del Palme was, a little
bit.
Right. But not... I don't know. Not, like, Maharlika is a lot more straightforward. Not, I don't know, we were just trying to figure out how we were going to do it. Like, all right, we grew up in these California-style kitchens where, you know, market produce is a big deal, and you're kind of dumb to be a professional chef and not shop at the farmer's market or not know what seasonality is. And, yeah, and then kind of bridge that in our upbringing of Filipino food and culture, you know what I mean? So it's kind of just us figuring that out. And I think to this day, we're still figuring it out. But I think more and more, we're kind of strengthening that vision and figuring it out and just continuing the dialogue, you know what I mean?
And so what were those reactions to those early dinners like? Were people into it? I mean, from the get-go, you're like, we're going to do Filipino food. Were people scratching their heads, or were they just down to support you because you'd been around for so long?
It was like starting from scratch, man. Yeah. Like,
we fed our family and friends first. Like, right. Literally.
Honestly, yeah. The first pop-up was only friends and family. Like, test drive, you know? It was a real one. Like, they're all critical as fuck. But, you know, like, our parents, like, are you sure?
Yeah, it's like, oh, you were judging us all these years.
Yeah, my dad was like, you want to do Filipino food?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a Filipino dude cooking Italian food the rest of my life? Like,
yeah.
I don't know, you know? It just, something innate in us for sure was pushing us to be like, well, if we're going to pursue being in the restaurant industry, then shit, man, we definitely have to try pursuing Filipino food. And whatever that means, it's going to be our way. Mm-hmm. And it took us a minute to be confident in whatever our way was going to be. And you know, that's what really this journey has been about.
And
like,
what is that way compared to traditional Filipino food? Since there aren't a lot, I mean, because really you'd probably have to go back to the Philippines to compare it to other restaurants other than the, you know, handful that are in America. Like, so how was your approach different to serving people food in the professional setting compared to what it's like back home?
Or
back
home,
the home home.
Well, I mean, let's be real. Like, 80% of Filipino food is one-pot cooking.
Sure.
So it's a stew or a braise. It's a poor country, so you have, you know, not bad cuts of meat, but cuts of meat that need to be slow-cooked to have any sort of tenderness or flavor.
Yeah.
So we take that approach. We use a lot of cuts that need to be slow-cooked or braised, and the vegetables are always like mushy.
Uh-huh.
They're not cooked to, say, Western standards of al dente or properly cooked vegetables. But, you know, growing up here, we definitely give a fuck about properly cooking vegetables.
Sure.
So it's a mixture of those things. So a lot of those stews and braises are definitely like, I hate the word, but deconstructed.
Mm-hmm.
And more so for us, the way we look at it is like, when you're eating something and it's all one pot, for the most part, everything's damn near the same texture.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So we take that away and we kind of, this is what a turnip should be like. This is what this meat should be like. This is what the sauce should be like. And it's really not that cerebral. And then we try to make it prettier because usually it's just brown food that's scooped over rice. And we love that shit too, but, you know, we're trying to really progress the cuisine and give it some light here.
You know,
we're trying to broaden the idea of what Filipino food can be,
right,
per se. You know, we've always grown up it being that one, that pot, turo turo, your mom's cooking, and we're trying to like. And also, we're Filipino American. You know, we're second generation. We're born here, and our influences are a little different. And I think it shows with the way that we're approaching the food, and and a reflection of our upbringing being Filipino Americans, I'd say.
Do you run into issues with anyone saying that it's inauthentic because of how much you've filtered it? Even though when the authentic version may not be as good?
I think we talk about this a lot. There's a difference between authentic and traditional.
Sure.
You know, I think it gets...
Lasa's food is authentic to us,
right,
and our experiences as Filipino Americans, you know? But it is not traditional. That's why we're so keen on calling it Filipino inspired. You know?
Gotcha.
Because it
just
is.
Just get in front of that argument.
Yeah, right. Just like, so we'll,
this
yeah.
is.
Just yeah. like, guys, we're trying totally. Here.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're doing the pop ups. When did you start to notice a shift and how long were you doing it for?
A year and a half in, I think, when we started feeding strangers.
Right.
You know, like we went from backyard dinners to
Highland Cafe. Off of York and Highland Park.
A friend of a friend
owned it, so twice a month. I lived down the street at the time, while we were working at Squirrel, and we did twice a month for, we did 6 months?
Eight months?
So we did about 8 months worth of dinners there. Those were prefix, still us figuring it out, you know, but starting to get a little bit more adventurous and confident. Because, yeah, we started feeding strangers, you know. It was like, all right, this word of mouth thing's kind of working.
Yeah.
That was
pretty cool. Like,
it was.
Like, that. There was this one night where I asked Chad, like, hey, do you know anybody in here? He's like, nah, man. I'm like, shit. All right. Like, cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like,
all right.
Sorry, Mom. No seats left.
Yeah.
I can get you in for the late seating. And then when did you, you know, pop-ups are one thing. You know, I assume that you guys still had side, you know, main jobs, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when do you go, like, we're all in? Like, we're going to start doing this full-time.
Well, I think after Highland Cafe, we were going, like, maybe, we were defeating maybe 20, 30 people a night.
Right.
Yeah.
And then...
Then we took a break.
Oh, yeah.
Took a break to work on a business plan, because we were stuck on the old school idea of trying to find $500,000 worth of investors to open a restaurant in L.A. So anyways, while we're doing
how
that...
How'd that go?
Didn't happen. Anyways, so yeah, I started working at Elysian.
Mm-hmm.
And so the owner there, David Thorne, used to work at Canalay. We have a lot of mutual friends. And when I came back, even while I was at Squirrel, he was like, if you ever need work outside of Squirrel, holler at me, you know? And so whatever, I took a gig with him, and it made sense that eventually Lhasa would be able to do dinners out of Elysian, because it's kind of this defunct restaurant space that gets rented out for different things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it started getting crazy. Because
we were doing, like, when we start at Elysian, we were feeding 120 people a night.
So the first three, we fed 90 people.
So 90, it took us a week to sell it.
Which is amazing.
Right. And then the last 5 months after that, we're booking them solid, 120 people.
In less than
15, 20 minutes. Yeah, so it's like that whole LA craze, like, what is this shit?
The lines, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in,
and also most people probably had never really had Filipino food until they sat down with you.
Right. And it's that sense, I think, with a lot of the diners of, it was awesome because people were excited to see what we're trying to do with the food. You know, we were always growing up in it with one way, and these guys are trying to do something else, or it doesn't look familiar, but it tastes familiar.
Totally.
You know, and so that was exciting, kind of seeing that, and from there it was just like, shit, all right, let's go.
So,
and
yeah, then that's when we started getting any kind of press,
mm-hmm. right?
Any kind of interest.
And Alvin.
Let's talk about Alvin.
Yeah.
So Alvin, owner of Egg Slut, Alvin mm-hmm. Kellen, had this space, mm-hmm. Unit 120, mm-hmm. which was an incubator, mm-hmm. a rotating incubator, mm-hmm. which is amazing. Right. Like, just the concept that any chef totally. Would be like, I'm going to have a space which is essentially like a loss leader. Like, it's not really always making profit,
mm-hmm.
but so I can help, you know, share with those spots
right.
is unique.
Right. So he's definitely the one that was like, you guys are trying to find $500,000 worth of investors. How much are you trying to own of your company? He was hardcore devil's advocate of, you guys have been working really hard at your thing, and do you want it to be your thing, or do you want to be a fucking horse that's getting gambled on? You know what I mean? And so, to be honest, we were considering the Ramen Champ space, although tiny. And he was like, come downstairs. So we're here at the plaza, and we go in here, which was Faegiana, but not Faegiana at all.
Brown and yellow walls.
Right. Yeah. And he was like, I'm going to turn this into Unit 120. What days do you guys want? And I was like, I want to quit my day job. Give me the weekends. If there's going to be any sort of progress and growth for Lhasa and us pushing it, I wanted to quit my day job. And, you know, it sounded scary, but we went for it.
Mm.
And then what was it like? What were those early days like of getting it open and getting the word out? Did you see, now that it wasn't just like a one-off thing, did you see like a rise and then a dip as far as customers come?
Yeah. But I think because it was only three nights a week, it allowed us to kind of be busy.
Yeah, we were busy.
You know?
Busy.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not like spread out in 6 days, fill this restaurant up. It was like three nights out of the week. We're doing a prefix menu, three courses. We're going to cap it at like 50, 60 a night or something like that. Just because we had like a skeleton crew. So we do what we can, kind of a thing.
And then, based on the popularity, how did the decision, I mean, the fact that you guys didn't get bounced out of here, the fact that Alvin was like, all right, you guys can have it. Like, what was that discussion like? What was that moment like?
That was a trip. I mean,
it was a trip. First of all, we were looking at a different space in here. In the plaza.
Oh, so you were going to leave the space and go to another space in the plaza.
No, right. Yeah, we were...
Well, we didn't even... I mean, we just thought he was going to continue. It was almost like, I wonder who his next president's going to be.
Yeah, right. It was almost a year up.
Right. Let's do our own thing now. Let's try. Can we do it? Blah, blah, blah. Told him what we were trying to do. Showed him our renderings. And he was like, how about you guys just take over 120? You know? And as a homie, he was like...
And by that time, we already asked for the fourth night.
Right.
You know? Right.
And so
he was real. He was like, you know, as a homie, and for you guys to make a business decision, you'd be idiots to say no to this. But I also understand.
If you want
to
leave.
If you want to leave and you have this dream space idea mapped out in there.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you could work that out in here.
Yeah.
You know?
And
this was bigger than that.
Mm-hmm. And already home in so many ways.
Yeah.
Right. It's the best locale in the plaza.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. You can see the
people the, waiting for Helen Reyes.
Yeah. And so now that you've been open, you shut down for a little bit and been open, what's it been like? I mean, what's it been like, you know, a year in, as brothers, as partners, as a restaurant? Like, how has it been for that whole journey to be here now?
As brothers, a lot of growth.
Yeah.
As business partners, a lot of growth on so many levels. When we started, we were fucking at each other's throats. Like, you know, like, what the fuck are we doing? Or like, what the fuck are you doing? You know, this is a bad idea. And then it's like reality TV type shit.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like communication.
Yeah.
Trust each other a lot more.
You know, and
talk about it.
Yeah.
Know when to talk about it.
Yeah.
Instead of during service, like after service, home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Hey, I know I'm 30 tickets deep, but I need you right now to have a... My brother and I always like to call them house meetings, but they could happen anywhere, you know, especially not in the house, like on the street in front of a lot of friends.
Right. Yeah.
But you know, and being on number 18 on Gold's 101 list, I mean, that has to be... Even though awards and lists, you know, you can get caught up in that stuff, but that has to be... An amazing validation of your food, the culture, the family, like everything, you know? Yeah. I mean, how many Filipino restaurants are on the list?
Yeah. I mean, for me as a...
Three.
As a brother and as a partner, I was proud, you know? Like, I've been a fan of Chad, you know, what he does and how he cooks, and just to see that validation for what he does and what the kitchen team does, you know?
Yeah.
What we do, it was incredible. And I honestly didn't think we'd...
We great. Didn't even.
I mean, them. I didn't think.
So last year we were on. All right, let's talk about this list real quick. Last year we were on the list as Far East Plaza. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously the Lhasa was just part of Unit 120.
Right. It was the whole thing.
Right.
I remember, yeah.
And so, getting asked to do food at the launch party, I noticed Helen Reyes is on the list. None of us had any sort of like. We were unsure if we were on the list, or a huge part of me was like, oh, we're probably Far East Plaza again, but way higher,
because
this plaza is fucking killing it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And like during the fucking event, you were there, right?
I was there.
We were busy.
So, oh, no, you were like super busy.
Right. So like there was no time to like leave and say hi to everybody. And like it was like almost the end of it. Chef Ryan from Irina came up with a freaking pamphlet and was like, fuck you guys, and he threw it down. It was like number 18. I'm like, do the numbers matter? And everyone was like, shut the fuck up, the numbers matter. And it was just like wild, you know. It was like, also like before that, during it, a lot of chefs that I respect the living shit out of were coming up to us and congratulating us, and I was just like, yeah, it's an honor to be here. I didn't
right.
know
yeah. right right right
and yeah. maybe it was for that and the fact that we're but I was just like,
thank you.
Yo, yeah.
I'm like, happy to be cooking here.
I'm so happy to be here. Yeah. Like, this is one event that I really wanted to be a part of, you know? And so, yeah. It's been pretty crazy. It's like... So, we had a slow summer. And, you know, honestly, throughout the summer, we were kind of, like, starting to get fucking scared. Like, is this... Like, we'd talk about, like, hey, just a reminder, if this doesn't work out, doesn't mean we can't get awesome jobs elsewhere, you know? We'd even talk like that because, you know, to kind of make it lighthearted. But then also the other side of that was like, all right, what the fuck can we do to get people in here, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're confident in what we do.
It's still Filipino food. It's
still Filipino food.
And it's still, like, our reality is... Mm-hmm. Choosing to pursue Filipino food is a huge risk. And what I mean by that is your average Angelino family or couple is going to be like, hey, baby, what are we having for dinner tonight? Filipino food is not a part of that fucking conversation. Mm-hmm. Maybe 5 years from now, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
But I mean, if within a year or two, if Lhasa could be a part of that conversation, fuck yeah, you know? And that's what I'm hoping for. Mm-hmm. So if like... The closer goal is that Lhasa is part of the conversation, and the bigger goal is that Filipino food is part of the conversation, then, you know, I think we're doing the right thing.
Awesome. That's well, I think you're doing a great thing. Congratulations. Yeah. Where can people find you? Online? You guys are up on the gram.
Yeah. Lhasa's on the gram.
Yeah, on the gram. Lhasa_LA.
Yeah.
Online.
www.lhasa-la.com.
Come through.
Yeah, come through, have dinner, have lunch, hang out.
You're up on Resi too, right?
Yeah, we're up on Resi for reservations.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's great, which you'll definitely need on the weekends here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the farmstead cheese company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Roth's Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Satori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth generation cheesemakers combine old world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country.
The hordes, the freaks, the beauties and the creeps, creatures of the night.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We have the Rizzos live in studio. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Would you like to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Megan.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Bettina.
Leaning on the drums.
Leaning on the drums to get closer to the microphone.
As drummers do.
The Rizzos are one of the hardest working bands in New York City.
Verified.
Verified. What sets you apart from the other 19 or so hardest working bands?
Ooh. We're the prettiest.
I mean,
I don't know if that's. I'm gonna be honest. I'm not sure.
We're probably
true.
The most iced band.
We're the most iced band.
Yeah.
We're sponsored by Smirnoff Ice.
We're the
Ice.
Only King Pizza band on the hardest working list this year.
But there's a lot of hardworking King Pizza bands.
That's
there
true.
Are a lot of hardworking.
Do you feel like that poll is representative? It's a real indication, or do you,
you
think?
Know, I was thinking about this yesterday, and because I felt like that might come up talking about this. And here is my stance, and you guys feel free to jump in.
Rev up for it.
I really was like preparing in the shower. So I think that since there are so many bands and so many shows, that their criteria makes a ton of sense for their publication. Like, and they have at the top of the list every year. They're like, these are the shows that we listed. We can only get to so many. So this is like our hardest working. And I think that's 100% valid and really fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I think there are so many smaller bands that are busting their asses, butts, all the time.
It's a podcast, you can say asses.
That's true.
Yeah. Ass.
Sweet.
Well, they're busting it. That don't get, they don't play the right, like the bigger venues, they don't get the write-ups on certain blogs, but they're playing just as many shows, if not more. So I think there are different like levels of hardest working depending on
so
how you
like,
want to find
so
it.
So there's a shadow hardest working. A secret yeah. hardest working, if you will.
Yeah, I would say so.
Probably yeah. like, yeah, and like a lot of people like, also like, that list just does not include like DIY venues and things that like, yeah. they're not, there could be someone playing like 365 shows a year.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know about it.
Like we played a good number of basement shows and like house shows last year, which like those aren't going to get on there because yeah. no one wants their address on the internet.
And also, if we're honest, we're not really hardworking. We
don't
really work
untrue.
Hard.
Speak for yourself,
she
Justin.
Choose to disagree.
Mr. Late to everything.
I was kind of on time today.
I was unclear that house shows and DIY venues did not show up on that. I feel like that's a huge part of the scene that
yeah.
they're tracking.
I'm assuming they don't.
They didn't, no.
Not for the most part.
Yeah.
Because it's only, yeah, it's got to be, like, through, I don't know.
Yeah, but like I said, like, I think their criteria is super spot on, and I think there's a good and valid reason why these shows don't, like, the basement shows don't end up listed, because you don't really need that being blasted out that big, because the show will fit 30 people and you're happy. But it definitely is missing a section of the, like, DIY scene, for sure.
Well, I also think a lot of bands get their footing in those venues too. I mean, even to get to somewhere like Alphaville or yep. something along those lines, you have to play a number of house shows to even know what it is to get on stage.
Exactly. Totally.
I yeah. want to read something you sent to me about you. The Rizzos.
Ooh.
Their currency is laughter. Main export is good times. Their GDP is roughly that of a deserted island. Please tell me about your main export of good times.
Justin?
Well, you see, we don't import a lot except for beer, but because we import so much beer, we're just naturally always producing good times, at least for ourselves. I don't know how well-known we are in the international community yet for our export of good times, but we like to think that, I mean, it's really the only thing we got. We're not producing anything else.
To speak to our international Snacky Tunes community, what type of good times would you be bringing to them across the sea?
Well, hopefully they'll get a little bit of awkward dancing.
I was about to shout out our game.
What's our game?
What's our game?
On the count of three, do the ugliest dance you can think of.
Oh, yeah. And make the worst face possible.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good time.
Can we get a worst face? Count three. One, two, three.
Oh, I did the dance move, too. Oh, yeah. So weird. I don't know what that was. Zombie.
For the listeners at home, how ugly do you think that was?
I'm going to say Megan won.
Oh.
Oh.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Yeah.
Good job,
Megan. You threw in the wiggle. For those who can't see, you threw in a wiggle. Can we get a song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you going to play for us first?
Do you want to do Bless This Mess?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Cool. This is a newish one.
Here we go.
Yep.
You mentioned King Pizza Records earlier. King Pizza Records is a gang.
It is a gang.
You're not
just
wrong.
Just like ICP.
Just like ICP.
we're officially recognized by the FBI.
Let's not tip them off, Justin.
Hey.
For the uninitiated, what is King Pizza Records and who makes up the gang?
Bettina, you take this one. Oh, okay. Are you fixing something?
Well, I'm trying to find the part of my hi-hats I destroyed, but I'll do it in a second.
I'll take it. Okay. So King Pizza Records was started by our friend Greg Hansen. He plays drums of the Mad Doctors, among some other bands. He started it he wanted to be able to, as a true fan of music in Brooklyn and elsewhere, he was very concerned that all these awesome bands that he knew weren't really getting distribution or any sort of like label support. And so he wanted to put his own resources to helping other people release their music digitally on tapes and on vinyl as well. And he also wanted to really like build and foster a community where, in addition for him like putting out music, he also wanted to create like a community that would like self-sustain and support itself and kind of be like an artist coalition of like, you know, if you're on the label, go see these awesome bands, support them, hype their stuff, listen to their stuff, spread it around, and really, you know, do it together sort of mentality.
And everyone's like very like-minded and like just really loves each other's music. And like, I think we've all made like our best friends out of this group of people, just like who love being at shows, who love making music, who love listening to music. And yeah, the community is a really huge part of it.
Yeah, it's been great. So it started, I want to say like 2013 with 4 bands maybe. And now we have a roster of like 25 to 30 at any time, mostly in Brooklyn, also in like Philly. And I think
Boston.
OMAX are from Ohio, something like that.
Ohio, Mark.
It's been really awesome. It's a ton of fun. Like everyone said, it's like good people hanging out, making music. And we try to be as inclusive and opening to people who like just want to come to shows as possible, because there's definitely that fear of like, what if I don't know anybody?
Yeah, so many people use the word community and then kind of fall short of it. What makes this community so unique?
Every King Pizza show, like, even if you don't know anyone, like, you walk into the room and I think you're going to leave knowing people. Everyone just, like, wants to talk, wants to get to know everyone. Like, if you walked in by yourself, someone would probably walk up to you and be like, hey, what's up? Like, what's going on? What brought you here?
Yeah, like, if I can, like, share, like, a true experience of someone else. I was talking to Romy from Power Snap. Shout out. She was talking about, like, she's a relative. I think she's only been in Brooklyn for about, like, a year now. And she said she came to a show. And then, like, because, like, I invited her or something. And then, like, she immediately got involved with, like, Seth and got involved with, like, working with people and, like, met a bunch of friends. And, yeah, it's just, like, cool. Like, we've made so many friends personally with, like, artists, photographers, musicians. And people just come and, I don't know, I think it's just, like, a very welcoming group of people that just want to have friends and have fun and support each other and, you know, help people's dreams come true.
Everyone's like super into side projects too. Like we have one good friend, Rachel Adler, who's a visual artist, and like she's like, I'm gonna put together an exhibit at this show. So then like that's a big show. You'll have like an opening and then her art's hanging up for like a couple months.
Yeah, she's doing a monthly thing at Footlight now where she's just gonna be, you know, she's like curating other people's art shows and like with like music as well. It's really awesome.
Yeah, you mentioned Footlight, but what are some of the other venues that the shows take place at?
The Gutter's a big one.
Yeah, we've taken a hard hold of the Gutter recently, mostly because Greg books there, and it's because it's wonderful and always sounds good.
So much. And there's bowling.
Yeah.
Where do they set up the bands?
There's a back room if you walk through the bathrooms.
Oh, that's right. I forget about that.
Pass the crapper and you'll find the music.
You'll find the crapper. No, just kidding.
I forgot. I saw White Lung there.
Oh, cool.
Forever
ago.
Yeah. That's right. Awesome. I always wanted them to set up on half of the lanes.
Dude, yeah.
That would be amazing. Cool. That is my dream.
That's the dream, right?
The opening scene of Josie and the Pussycats. They're playing on the bowling lanes.
They used to have the Asbury lanes in Asbury Park. I think that place has been closed for a while at this point.
I was talking to someone yesterday. They're reopening soon.
Yes. Woo.
Goals. We want to play there.
But I do know the Gutter had, they did cover bands on Halloween. They had some in the front room, which really shakes it up.
That's awesome.
Weird.
It's really interesting for this because it sounds like how when I went to basement shows growing up, it's the same thing where like you didn't know anybody, you would meet people. It's really awesome to hear in 2017, 2018, where people feel so isolated.
Yeah.
That there's a community like this that still exists and you can find, you can be a weirdo and go to a show and make friends, which is really what I always felt music and art did for people.
I agree. I think Greg has really interrupted you. I apologize. But he's collected all the weirdos. Like, he's collected a lot of weirdos that he knows.
There's more. And been like, there's more, I think.
Not there. That's true. Please, if you want to come see there's Garage Rock, come to King Pizza, most, be weird with us.
King but Pizza. Most of the weirdos.
Yeah. I would call that an unofficial subtitle.
The cheesiest line, weirdos.
Whatever you want to call it.
Can we hear another song?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I hope you guys don't mind. My hi-hat is now a crash cymbal.
Sweet. Let's do Breslin, because that's what I'm tuned for.
Perfect.
February 9th.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
February 9th.
You know where this is going.
I'm excited to talk about it.
Let's talk about it. Fourth annual Valentine's Day party.
Oh. Valentine's Day prom.
Prom.
In fact.
Yes. Well, prom is a party.
That is true.
It's
okay, you're right.
A party.
You're totally correct.
Not all parties are proms, but all proms are parties.
Correct, yes. Probably. And now I'm feeling sad that not all parties are proms.
Oh, yeah, true. Okay, fine. Fourth annual. Let's talk about it.
Yes.
All right.
Give us an origin story.
All right. So they're tuning. So I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about my favorite thing of the year, which is prom. We have a song called Prom Song, kind of a prom-y vibe. So 4 years ago, we were like, let's throw a Valentine's Day prom at Don Pedro, which is where we were playing a lot of shows and spending a lot of time. We played there like, I swear, once a week for 2 years. Something like that. That was a casual exaggeration.
Did that get counted? Did Don Pedro get counted?
Some shows.
Inconsistent.
Yeah. Depending on the show.
We were a little baby band, so.
Yeah, we played anytime someone was like, we need a band, Rizzles will say yes. We're like, you're right. So we had the first prom there. Just kind of like, we'll throw a show, we'll see how it goes. photo booth, prom king and queen, and dress it was up. Yeah, dress up formal, and it was a blast. Like, it was so much fun.
Was it proper formal or was it like themed formal?
Theme formal, I would say.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, you could show up casual. We're not like strict about it.
Yeah, there are no rules.
Yeah, there's no rules. Yeah. Parents, no rules.
Yeah.
And no chaperones. We did it with our greatest homies, Sirs and Madams.
Mm-hmm.
They were our prom dates for our first year, our second year, and our third year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not joining us this year because they recently split up.
They retired.
Makes us very sad. They retired.
Of us. Sick of us.
So yeah, we did the first one at Don Pedro. Mm-hmm. Where was the second
one? The last
one?
Two were at the gutter.
Last two both at the gutter.
Okay, and this one is going to be at the gutter as well because we love the gutter.
We do. And it has that disco ball and the fun twinkle lights. It just feels very prom-tastic.
Yeah. Is there prom dancing and bowling and everything?
We have yet to incorporate the bowling officially, but yeah. I do think we can consider that after prom.
Yeah. Oh,
like post-prom party.
That's always on the docket.
Take your limo.
Yeah.
I'm just
kidding. And is it... Tell us about the lineup. It's a mix of live music and DJs?
Yeah. So we're still starting out the details for a DJ, but I believe it's a member of World's Greatest Detective will be DJing.
He's going to be in between sets.
Yeah. And then, sorry, guys, I'm talking so much. So if you want to jump in, please feel free.
We have Ghost Funk Orchestras joining us, which I'm super stoked about. The Royal They and Plaid Dracula.
Yep. And then us. And well, reverse order.
And if you've never been, what can you expect?
Expect the unexpected. No, it's, I mean, it's going to be one, a lot of great music, if I do say so myself. We did a really good job picking awesome bands to play.
I agree.
There's going to be, we haven't hammered out all the details, but there's going to be definitely some fancy clothing and some dancing. There's going to be a prom king and queen, which we will vote on throughout the night ballot.
Yes.
There might be some campaigning.
Has the campaigning unofficially started, or does it start the night of?
I bet it's going to start as soon as people hear this podcast. It's going to...
It should start the night of, for fairness.
Yeah.
But...
Technically, there shouldn't be any campaigning near the polling place, but...
It's within 20 but feet.
It's a pretty small space, so we're going to have to...
Yeah.
I'm looking for a good fight.
But and we also have a host, which is Coach Dave. He's everyone's favorite gym teacher.
And chaperone.
And he's the only chaperone. Yeah. So he's always running around throughout the night, and he does intros for the bands and maybe some activities.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had a scooter race last
scooter
year,
race.
Which my team won. We won the relay.
Yep.
Very impressive.
It's very fun.
I'm proud of you.
Have there been any romance stories from past proms?
None that we can tell.
We can't say
here. Okay.
But yes, they're definitely happening.
Okay. Over beers and pizza afterwards.
Yes.
That's fair. Absolutely.
I want to make sure we talk about what's coming up the rest of the year. You're going on a mini tour.
Yeah, we're working on it. Probably about 4 or 5 days at the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do that. And then we're hoping to do a little bit longer of one, but we're still hammering out those details also.
And you have a release coming out too.
Yes. We are releasing a split 7-inch with our pals Top Notches from New Pulse. They're amazing. We are happy to welcome them onto the label. And then once we do that, we're probably going to do like a summer tour or something with them.
Amazing.
Figured it out.
And this all might be timed with Pizza Fest 5.
That's the goal. The goal is to have the 7-inch at Pizza Fest 5, which is going to be in May. That depends on, you know, pressing vinyl casual. I'm very excited we're going to be on vinyl. But Pizza Fest 5 should be fantastic, and hopefully our release is then.
Yeah. The biggest pizza part of the year, that's peak King Pizza Records right there.
Yeah, three days, lots of bands, lots of actual pizza.
Yeah, who are the are there actual vendors? Is it bring your own slice? What's the deal?
We usually have vendors and we sell pizza. So we will provide the pizza. Last year we worked with Sizzle Pie.
Delicious.
We've worked with Vinny's in the past, so that's all still being hammered out. But it will be tasty.
Cool.
And possibly vegan. I love Sizzle Pie.
It can possibly be vegan for you.
So excited.
Justin is now vegan, so.
Vegan pizza has come a long way.
Yeah.
The first slice I had was maybe 14 years ago in Eugene, Oregon, and it was garbage. It actually undid the statement that any pizza is good pizza. This is terrible.
Oh, no.
But it's really come a long way.
Did they do the thing where they tried to put fake cheese on
it?
Yeah,
that was the problem. I know that was the problem.
You can do it.
Just do some
sometimes now.
It's better now, but this was like the cashew cheese type thing. You're like, just give me a tomato pie.
Yeah.
Give me a gluten-free tomato pie. We're cool.
Yeah, see, fake cheese has come a long way, but I can imagine back then it was, like, just really unfortunate.
Pioneers. last question.
Oh, Oregon Trail joke.
Oh, yeah, there it is.
Died of dysentery and got a pizza.
If the Rizzos were any type of food or dish, what would you be?
We did discuss this a little bit, and we think that we might be our classic tour sandwich.
Yeah, we're a sandwich.
We were a sandwich. Bettina loves sandwiches.
I feel very strongly about them. It's true.
And we feel so strongly we have an ongoing roundtable discussion with our pals Heavy Flow from New Jersey about what is a sandwich is and the nonsense that can be called a sandwich nowadays.
Yes.
Hot dog, not a sandwich.
I'm very angry about it.
Is there any particular type of sandwich?
Hot dogs are not sandwiches.
No, Justin, tour sandwich.
I said I was angry.
The Rizzo sandwich.
When we were on the road, we stopped at Target and we got a cooler and we just like got a bunch of ingredients to make sandwiches. So it's like a Martin's potato roll.
Awesome.
Some veganaise for the vegans. Avocado, tomato, and cheese if you can eat cheese.
Did we put spinach on the last?
We did put spinach on it.
Yeah.
Really good.
And my thought process.
Next time we should add some mustard, maybe.
Oh, getting fancy. My thought process is like it's quick, easy, satisfying, and you can have it in the back of a car.
You can make it in the back of a car.
Hey.
Sorry.
Where can people find you, find your music, find your tour dates, learn about King Pizza Records?
They can find our music at therizzos.bandcamp.com. We're also on Spotify and Apple Music and all that jazz.
We got a Facebook page where that's where basically all of our updates go, events, tour announcements. We have like a Twitter and an Instagram, but we're not so good at it.
Yeah, we're not the best.
We only use Twitter when we're on tour.
Yeah.
We're like and trying we're to embarrass Betty on the internet.
It's real. And King Pizza's best on Facebook, for sure.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. It's been great.
What's the name of the last song you're going to play for us?
It's Way Out.
Way Out. Well, thanks for tuning in for another episode of Snacky Tunes. We will be back next week. We'll see you then. Take us out.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Food Radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.